The Fan on Demand. You just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Would be Christian Louboutin. Those are the red shoes you'd be wearing to dance. If you're my wife. I swear I'm going to sneak into the closet one day and just paint all the bottoms of her shoes red and say, look at all the Christian Louboutins you have now. Like, I don't know what the difference is. Do you know the difference?
Nope.
No.
No, I do not, Bob.
All right, just asking. So we spent the last hour... debating the plight of the Toronto Argonauts and to a lesser extent the Canadian Football League and what happens if the Argos go belly up and blah blah blah.
Okay,
and I don't want to dwell on it too much because an hour is you usually can't fill an hour.
Well, we got a rash coming on later too.
Oh, is he going to talk about that?
Yeah,
more Argos.
Well, it's later though.
What does a rash know?
He knows everything
about everything.
He does.
He's an expert on everything.
Well, he's tennis and the Canadian Football League and the Minnesota Vikings
and so, baseball
too.
And hockey?
Yeah, that's to a lesser degree, yes.
Nobody can be an expert in all those things.
Yeah, well, I would knock the last one off the list. So would he, I think.
What, hockey?
Yeah.
He's not a hockey guy?
He's less of a hockey guy.
All right. Well, so give me your take real quickly. I mean, my position is simple. It's straightforward. I think we've reached a place we've never been to before with the Toronto Argonauts.
I would agree with that.
That there always was a door, a light at the end of the tunnel, a possibility. It may not materialize. You may think it's never going to happen, but at least there was a possibility that this idea, this ownership group, this whatever was new, might get you across the finish line, bring you to a place that they haven't been for 30, 40 years. Now, there's no door. Now you got to knock down the wall or build a door, and I don't think they can do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I heard Coop on here earlier, and I know he has the don't worry, they'll have to fix it because they have to fix it because they need Toronto, so they'll fix it. But you got to show me how they're going to fix it. You know, you got to explain to me where the money's going to come from and, you know, where the motivation and where the political will is going to come from. And look, this thing could still evolve into a kind of a cause celeb, right? That's possible. Because this is an old team with great history and the league's got cultural significance and people might finally get worked up about it and say,
no,
you can't let this happen. And by the way, that is a publicly owned facility down there. So we got to make this work somehow.
What's a publicly owned facility?
BMO.
Oh, BMO.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, with its, you know, it's a publicly owned facility that you wouldn't know is a publicly owned facility, right? So that could still happen. It could. So a groundswell could emerge. But, you know, the groundswell better emerge pretty darn fast. And if it doesn't, you know, if you don't have something like that, again, I can't see these guys reaching into their own pockets for $20 million. That would be the difference in the stadium conversion. I don't see a lot of motivation for MLSE to do the stadium conversion unless they absolutely have to, because they're in the soccer business. Their soccer people don't need it. They're going to revamp the place for soccer and for the outdoor hockey game they're going to have there one of these days. So that's what they care about. They don't give a damn about the CFL. So, you know, the question is, you know, who gives a damn and who's going to put their money where their mouth is? And, you know, the commissioner's on his way out. So this is not his problem. This isn't on his watch. This is on the next guy's watch. And, as grass is going in the dome. And even if grass wasn't going in the dome, it's not a good place for them and everybody. And they're kind of dying a death of a thousand cuts while playing there. And David Braley's 73. And he said he wants to sell his teams by the time he's 75. And he's fired everybody in his ticket sales and marketing department. So they're the scapegoats. But, you know, everybody knows the one thing David Braley doesn't do very well is sell stuff. You know, in BC, he did really well because he had Bobby Ackles, the late Bobby Ackles, who had a great connection to that community and to the business community in Vancouver. And he was the bridge that helped the Lions get reestablished to the degree that they are. You know, they're not the Canucks, but they're fine. He didn't have that guy here.
Did he pick the wrong guy to be president?
You know what? I don't know what kind of job Chris Drudge has done because it's kind of invisible, honestly. Well, but I'm not sure. Look, I'm not sure.
Based
the greatest,
on the evidence that you have hand, does it look like he's done a good job?
No, it doesn't. But the thing is, Bob, I'm not sure. They've had a lot of different people take a crack at it.
That much I'll acknowledge.
And I'm not sure anybody has found the magic down there. You know, there isn't any magic. You know, there's a ceiling. There's a ceiling you keep hitting.
Well, there were clearly two bumps over the last 20 or so years. One, when Gretzky, McNall, and Candy owned it and Brian Cooper was the president.
Mm-hmm.
Another one when Cinnamon and Sokolowski owned it and Keith Pelley was the president. I don't know that either one of them ultimately had success.
Well, let's say the McNall group was operating under what we would call a false economy because he was stealing the money from other people.
Well, I grant you that, but still.
So that's the first one.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about the economics of the Toronto Argonauts, McNall's economics.
But it was phony money, right? Like it was a kind of a phony money pouring in the first year when they spent all that money. And then the second year they spent no money, cut off the tap completely. So, you know, the first year was Hell's a Pop and then Rocket Ishmael and the Blues Brothers. And then the second year was, hang on a second, we got no money in the bank. So that's because Bruce was a crook. The second iteration, you know, with Cinnamon Sokolowski and David Braley as their silent partner and Keith running the show, they tried all kinds of stuff. You know, they ran a very successful Grey Cup. They did, you know, money was spent. They did a lot of things right.
They drew 25,000 almost all the time.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was a hard 25,000, but
you never know the answer to that.
But you know what?
There were people there.
But yeah, except that it wasn't sustainable either.
No, clearly it wasn't.
So, you know, we've seen a lot of different things over the years. You know, we saw Harry Arnest years ago run it on the cheap, and he's still, I think, the last guy that made a profit. You know, he ran it on the absolute bare bones cheap. But, yeah, no, look, there's smart people who are committed to the league, who wanted it to work desperately, couldn't make it work.
Right.
You know, remember, you know, that TSN was involved, and Paul Beeston was involved, and you know, a lot of people, you know, the very successful folks on other areas were involved.
Oh, I know. And it's not because I haven't had smart people run it.
You know, they've had some horrible people run it, too.
Yes, but even smart people haven't been able to make it work.
That's right.
And that's why when I tell the story about the former commissioner of the CFL asked me what I would do, I said, I don't have an answer.
Nope.
I don't presume to be smarter than the guys you've had there before, and I don't have another, I don't have a rabbit up my sleeve. I don't know what you do to fix it.
Nope. No, and you've
and
got
to, now the brick wall doesn't have a door. You're going to have to bang through that wall to make a door. And even if you do bang through that wall, there's no guarantee you'll be successful. If the Toronto Argonauts got a 20 or 25,000 seat stadium tomorrow, is there a guarantee that they'd fill it?
Well,
I'd say no.
Unless it was
because it happened in Montreal doesn't mean it can happen here.
Well, and it only happened to a point, and Montreal has never sold out. Since they went to 25, they haven't sold the place out, and now they're drawing 19, right? There are limits. You know, I think if the varsity conversion had worked because it's a historic place and it's right on the subway and it would have been cute as heck, I think that would have had some legs. But that doesn't mean the stadium at York University would necessarily have legs, or even BMO would necessarily have legs because they're not cute, and it wouldn't be as sexy a location, and it would be different. Mm-hmm. So, no, look, I'm with you. I don't have a solution. I've seen a lot of different things tried, and I've seen a lot of people kind of put their hearts into it and then eventually wave the white flag.
If, in fact, Braley throws the keys on the table, do you think the CFL will operate the franchise?
Boy, that is a very, you know, and again, Brian was in here, and I know he suggested, and I don't know if it's true or not true, how much of their stuff, you know, their television rights deal or any sponsorships are tied to having a franchise in this town. So they'd have to do a cost-benefit analysis. If that's the case, if it's, you know, if you don't have a team in Toronto, this is now worth this, then I guess you'd have to think pretty long and hard about keeping the team going, wouldn't you? But, you know,
you're saving Peter but paying Paul.
Yeah. So I don't know. That would be, you know, they've just signed a great big new TV deal. Is there a Toronto clause in that TV deal? I don't know.
100% there is.
Well, you would think so. Although I don't think, again, I think their draw, if you look at, you know, when they draw a lot of people for TV, it's almost always west on west. You know, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan did over a million.
No, I know.
You know, Saskatchewan and Hamilton did 500,000.
I mean, one of the things I'd love to see is, you know, when we see these big CFL numbers, how many, what's the viewership in Southern Ontario?
Yeah.
And more importantly, and this is what's really critical, and I don't know how you quantify this. If the Argonauts don't exist, does that viewership in Southern Ontario dissipate?
See, I think Hamilton is a separate thing, and you know, maybe it's because I'm there, and I you know, maybe I'm partial, but I do think it has a separate kind of existence and identity, and it's, you know, they do have a new stadium, and I think it's, you've got a, you know, they've got an owner who's willing, they got an owner who thinks he's going to be able to make money, and you know, so there is, so people there are going to watch the Hamilton Tiger Cats to a degree, I think.
Will they watch other teams?
I think, I mean, you still have, you know what, the CFL is still in the conversation in Hamilton, yeah, in a way that is not in the conversation here.
I don't dispute that.
You know, and there have been times when it wasn't. There were times when that team was dead and buried. But right now, you know, Hamilton's having a bit of a moment, and one of the things that people have kind of wrapped the Hamilton flag around is the Ticats.
Look at, and I've referenced this too, and then we're going to move on, because otherwise we're too much of this.
Yeah, I got to talk about, I've got,
when,
I got
when the Los Angeles Rams left for St. Louis, and the Raiders had gone back to Oakland, and L.A. was left without a team. There was much talk about doom and gloom, about television numbers going down dramatically, sponsors revising their thing, that you had to have a team in L.A. And here we are, how many years? 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how long it is without a team in Los Angeles. Well, a long time.
And, you know, again, a Los Angeles team, you really kind of have to still talk about the, you know, the Raiders were kind of there and then they weren't there. And,
yeah.
But you really have to go back to the Rams.
But, well, and I mentioned the Rams leaving for St. Louis.
Yeah.
But the television numbers in Los Angeles never really suffered. They may have gone down a bit for a period of time. There was also a period of time, and we may be in it now, when the television numbers are higher than ever.
Yep.
So the absence of a franchise in the second largest city in America really had no impact on television numbers. So we can sit here and opine about what this does to the TSN deal with the CFL and what the economic ramifications could be and what does it mean in terms of sponsorship and how important is national sponsorship anyway to the league, because this league is still ticket sale driven.
Yeah,
to a great extent.
And it's tilted to the West in a lot of ways.
But there's a possibility that you could take the Toronto Argonauts out of the equation and the impact won't be as great as people think.
And that would be my, you know, again, my unscientific opinion would be that that's the case.
And that's mine too. I share that with you.
So I had something, the other thing I want to talk about, again, I know we only have limited time, but.
Not really not as much time as you like.
Well, I know, you know.
If you're prepared to stay late, I am too.
One of those funny tipping point moments yesterday, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, I guess, did a scrum. And they asked him about John Gibbons' future, and he gave it's sort of a hum and a answer, although with Alex, you know how Alex is, but he said, well, he's under contract, and, you know, we review everybody at the end of the year, and of course, you know, the deal is with those, he's got a kind of they have a kind of a perpetual set of one-year deals, so his if he stays till the end of the year, he gets another year, so he always has kind of a year to be paid out, but he didn't say he's coming back, and because of that, you know, it was a bad night last night for the Blue Jays anyway. They didn't play well. The other guys clinched. Everybody, even the kind of diehards, said that's it. The Vultures, the next thing that will happen here between now and the end of the season is that we will go into John Gibbons watch, fairly or unfairly. You know, I heard a guy, this is the kind of stuff that drives me nuts.
Well, wait, how do...
Because that's what happens.
Do we go into John Gibbons watch, and is Alex being cute here? Because some people would say we're in Alex Anthopoulos' watch already.
Well, yeah.
And you know what general managers do.
Yeah, except that here's the two things I would say about that, Bob, in terms of Alex Anthopoulos. One is the guys who pay him are the guys who know under what conditions he operated this year in terms of financial restraint, right? So if his hands were tied financially, they were tied by the people who would make that decision. So one would presume they would understand whether or not he could have done things or whether they prevented him from doing things. And number two, because, you know, the fruits of his term as general manager in terms of the draft are just now appearing in the major leagues. Aaron Sanchez, the first guy he ever drafted. I think those young guys and the fact that they look like they're going to be good, that's going to buy him. I think he's got a cushion that is not based just on this year. But they're not going to make the playoffs. People are going to be disappointed. It is a results-oriented business, and it is also an entertainment business where sometimes people are gotten rid of just to satisfy the consumer base, just to change the face of the team. And it's, you know, conventional wisdom, right? Like, I was listening to a guy on a radio station, not this station, but the sports guy on another station this morning, and he comes on and talks about how it's obvious that the problem with the Blue Jays, the difference between them and the Orioles, coaching. Now, anytime anybody says coaching in reference to baseball, you know they don't know anything about baseball. Like coaching. That Buck Showalter has coached the Baltimore Orioles to a division title and John Gibbons hasn't coached the Blue Jays. But that's the kind of dumb stuff that's going to be out there. And I'm not sure he's going to survive this because I think, you know, you and I have talked to, I don't know why he played Mooney Kawasaki last night. I have no idea. But most of the time this year, I kind of understood what he was doing. But, you know, that's the nature of sports is somebody sometimes has to be thrown over the side. You put a new face on it. And, you know, you can sell a lot of things about this team going into 2015. You say, we still got Bautista and Encarnacion. We've got these young pitchers. We're going to go out and try and sign Melky Cabrera. Lurie's going to come back, and he's going to be healthy. You know, we got to deal with second base. We got to figure some other stuff out. But it's not like all hope is lost here at all. It's actually, you know, you've talked about this. The turning of the page might not be that hard to sell right now. Way easier than it was a year ago when they were, you know, just god-awful. But what's the simplest, easiest thing to do when you're trying to renew hope, be back in the hope business? You put another guy out front.
Yeah. And I was going to say before, I mean, we've seen this movie before. General managers whose jobs are threatened fire the manager, hoping that they move the blame off of them and onto the manager.
See, except I don't think his, I don't,
and
think
I don't
Alex
I'm not saying Alex is built that way.
And I don't think he is. And I also don't think his job's threatened.
Oh, I think his job is threatened. I said at the beginning of the season, I was told that, and I think it was confidential. In turn, I certainly wouldn't reveal the individuals. That the bar for Alex Anthopoulos was the postseason. If he made the postseason, his job was safe. If he got the team into contention to play meaningful baseball games in September, they would consider bringing him back. If he failed to do both of those things, he was gone. Now, and I said this in the spring, he's not going to the postseason. So that's off the table. So now what you're evaluating, did they really play meaningful baseball games in the month of September? You think they did. I think they didn't.
Well, the television audience thinks they did. So that's, you know, that's...
They're idiots. I don't care about them. You can't cite television audiences.
No, but I'm saying that's...
In the absence of nothing else to watch, you'll watch...
No, but it's not. There's other things to watch.
You'll watch bad television.
That's not true. There was other stuff to watch. And they, you know, that people have bought... There has been no kind of... People have not jumped off the bandwagon in September. So if that's how you want to... You know, if I'm an owner, that's how I'm going to measure it. You know, that's how I would measure it if I was an owner.
Okay.
But
you
look,
know, maybe.
I would be willing to bet you that Alex Anthopoulos will be back. I'm not so willing to bet.
I'm not here saying I don't think he should be back. That's far from what I'm saying.
No, but I think he will be too. Those are two different things.
I don't know. I think based on what I was told, I think there's a real question mark. I don't think the decision's been made. And if it has been, I certainly haven't been informed of it. I think it's a 50-50 with Anthopoulos. Now, Gibby, I hope he's back. I don't think he's to blame for anything. But I have to acknowledge managers generally don't last. I think it's kind of dumb. They've kept managers that have had a lot worse records than Gibby's going to have this year.
Or done a lot worse jobs.
And done a lot worse jobs.
They're two, which also could be two different
things. See what our next guest thinks about this. We're going to talk about a couple things here. Here's Bob Elliott of the Toronto Sun. Hello, Elliott.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robert.
How are you?
Just great. How are you guys?
Yes or no? Alex Anthopoulos will be back as general manager.
Oh, what's the question?
Try and listen to the question, then give your answer.
Well, I was trying to beat the buzzer.
There is no buzzer.
All right.
The buzzer that
you rephrase your question.
Dial tone. What you want to avoid here is dial tone. And if you keep being an a-hole, I'm going to hang up on you. Now
you would never hang up on.
Yeah,
me.
See that's
you go back to 1992.
See that's true. You won't hang
I got
on
socks
it.
Older than my relationship with you.
I'm your longest standing.
No, you're not.
No? Who is?
Everybody else.
All right, take it away.
Alex Anthopoulos will or will not be back as general manager next year?
Will be back.
Gibby will or will not be back
will
as
be
manager?
Back.
Will and will, both back,
will,
huh?
Will.
Why are you so, again, I hope you're right, Bob.
We haven't finished the triumvirate.
Okay.
Paul Beeston will or will not be back as president?
Don't know.
Yeah. That's a different conversation.
Okay.
Now, but if Paul Beeston isn't back as president, I believe it's because Paul Beeston finally is going to play golf and retire.
I don't see that happening.
Do you see him getting fired?
Well, no, but maybe there's another challenge. Maybe there's something else. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a cushy job like Joe Torre has or La Russa had before he joined the Diamondbacks. Maybe there's
There's a job for him. It's not very cushy though. He could take over at MLSE, which is a job that he used to covet.
He used to want to be that, and
he used to say in the old days, he said the only job I'd leave the Blue Jays for is the Maple Leafs
and shake up the lines. Yeah.
But I don't know whether he still feels that way at this point in his life.
But you're more versed on the hockey situation. You two, both of you guys are than I am. Is there an opening?
Not really. Well, there is because Lewicki is on his way out the door.
Well, there you go. So.
No, I mean, I don't know whether they would consider Beeston.
I would
say
the president has options.
So Bob, but with the other guys, now again, I don't think Alex is going anywhere. And I think given that ownership, you know, probably understands better than anyone else the restraints that they imposed on him, I'm thinking it would be kind of wrong if they got rid of him in this circumstance. But, you know, Gibby is, I know it was an article of faith when Alex hired him. He went out on a limb and hired him. Managers are disposable, and they might be looking for somebody to blame. So why are you secure that he will come back?
Well, I think it sheds poorly on the manager. Excuse me, on the general manager if you fire the manager. I mean, he had Farrell for 2 years, and now if he's going to get rid of Gibbons after 2 years, is this JP Ricciardi take two?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the average until Gibbons at the end, the lifespan was about a year and a half with Buck and Tosca, and then Gibbons coming in.
Yeah, so you think that's from Alex's point of view?
I think from their point of view, stability is the best course, and the reason, to the best of my knowledge, there hasn't been any. Big disagreements over who plays where or who bats where or anything, and they're both on the same page, so I don't see them in different camps.
Do you think those two guys...
The way Farrell and Alex were at the end.
At the end when they were, two solitudes essentially, right?
Yes.
Do you think those two guys have done a good job this year?
Well, I was critical of the general manager at the deadline for the lack of inactivity, but it occurred to me that if he does not have the resources or the approval to spend the resources, how can it be the general manager? Like if your mom sends you to the store with a dollar and tells you to get two things, you don't have a whole lot left over to rent a video or something. So I mean, if they say you got one third of Danny Valencia's salary, what was that, $532,000? If you can add that, and that's all you can add, then I think it's difficult to knock the general manager. I mean, they ask, if you can imagine this, a market like Toronto asking San Diego Padres to pick up Chase Headley, all of Chase Headley's salary, which is what happened for Nolan and Pilar and the third baseman to get Headley. I mean, that would be unheard of. Could you imagine that in 92 or 93?
Well, 92, 93, they had the highest payroll in baseball. So a different.
10 years ago, could you imagine asking San Diego, which is near the, which is in the bottom third of salaries. So, I mean, for them to ask something like that, now they can say all well and good. They can say, oh, we were just negotiating, which they've said, but I'm sorry. You're playing cards with one hand behind one hand tied behind your back. How are you able to go out and shop? How are you able to go out and improve if all you're going to deal is, you can't take on any money?
Sure.
And as I said at the time, if they can easily prove us wrong by spending money and adding money, like with 2 weeks before the deadline, and they didn't add money.
Now, how about Gibby? Because I was, you know, saying to Bob just before you came on that you kind of get that, you feel like that moment happens when the vultures start to circle, and I kind of felt like that started yesterday.
Okay. I can see maybe a little pressure on that, but I think they're going to probably finish with a winning record. First off, you spent 61 days in first place, and the last, it's not the first 61 days of the year. The last day was July 3rd, if I'm correct. I mean, this season, this finish is a disappointment. So, I mean, you got to blame somebody. So it could be the manager, or you could go by this the old saw about the injuries, and people might buy that. But I did hear you mention the viewership and how the game against the Cubs, the Wednesday game against the Cubs, set a record for a September game on Sportsnet since the Blue Jays have been on Sportsnet. So that shows some people are interested, and I think that's something like a year ago when his job was in question, the attendance had the largest increase of any major league team. The attendance is down somewhat this year. Don't ask me how much, but it's down a little bit.
Yeah, which is because of the bad offseason, right? Like that attendance to a huge degree is dictated during the winter, right, with expectations.
The previous year, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. With Bob Elliott. All right, let's put all that talk aside. You've got your 2 cents in on all these things. By the way, we have some breaking news is the as things just get worse and worse for the National Football League. A television outlet in Arizona is reporting Cards running back Jonathan Dwyer was just arrested for domestic violence.
Yeesh.
Yeah, just pile it on. It's just getting worse and worse. We'll have more on that presumably later on in this program. What we wanted to talk to you a little bit about is this Tournament 12. It's the second year for it. Robbie Alomar kind of is the host of this thing on behalf of the Blue Jays. It's a showcase for top Canadian baseball prospects rather at the Rogers Center. It's currently underway. In the wake of this, and I know this is sort of a new development, do you think there should be a greater commitment on the part of the Toronto Blue Jays to draft Canadian talent? The one thing we've seen, there's one Canadian on this roster, as we all know. Well, he's injured, but and he came via trade.
You got Dalton Pompey right now, actually. Technically, got
oh
two.
Yeah, there's technical. Technically, you got two. Yeah. But he's actually a draftee and a Minnesota, a Mississauga kid, isn't
That's
he?
That's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, even going back to Dave McKay and, you know, a handful of guys, Quantrill, and a handful of guys between then and now, this team really hasn't focused on Canadians and maybe even has more disregarded Canadians. How do you feel about that?
I would say the Blue Jays have focused on Canadians. I mean, they have... this year they have more Canadians in the minors than anybody else. They just passed Milwaukee 2 years ago. Milwaukee with Melvin and Gordash had the most. But I would say they focus, Robert, but they've missed the big guy, you know, like whether, I mean, they True. Missed Walker. So, and then they didn't have any interest. I remember Gordash telling me, we have zero interest because he plays too hard. And I said, how can you, it's impossible. I said, it's impossible to play the game too hard. It's like saying I care too much. And Ash's example was, well, he runs into walls when it's 11-1, and he doesn't know how to pace himself. It kind of sounds like Laurie, you know, looking back at it. But yeah. But Larry Walker had a wonderful, wonderful career with the Colorado Rockies. He won an MVP, and he won batting titles. But you look up his numbers, he was not a 155-game-a-year guy. He was injured an awful lot of time, and here on the turf, he would have been injured. So I sort of understood what they were talking about there, but they didn't want anything to do with Jeff Francis, who was Adam Loewen, who was a first rounder,
right.
And they didn't pick Laurie. Now the new regime has him, but I think this is. I can remember, I go back to the day when they'd bring up the ABC, the Academy from Montreal, and they'd bring them here to the Sky Dome, and they'd work out, and they had to go into the building between 8:45 in the morning and 9 o'clock, and no other scouts were allowed. So the other scouts would phone me, and I'd let them in a side door. I mean, here, everybody's here. You've got 25 teams watching the best prospects that they could find coast to coast. And I think they're being very good corporate citizens in for the, like, maybe not corporate citizens business wise, but what I'm talking about is for the community, whether you're from Nanaimo, BC, or you're from Quebec City, or whether you're from New Brunswick, they're given exposure to these kids. And you can't draft them all. I remember the one story that was a former general manager, I won't say his name, but Gillick was with the Orioles, and Gillick drafted more Canadians than the Blue Jays did. And the guy walked into the scouting director's office, and he says, "We have to close the borders." Well, they can't close the borders. It's a draft, you know? So, like, the guy this year, Gareth Morgan, the kid from North York, who got all the money from Seattle, he got $2 million. Well, he went 74. So all 28 teams besides the Blue Jays had a shot at him, and they didn't want him at that price. So I would say they're active, and they have Jamie Lehman does a good job. He signed Dalton Pompey just 4 years ago, a rapid rise to the big leagues. I know he's here. He started at Dunedin this year. He's coming off the bench, but to make it up to the big leagues in your fourth year, That's a fast trip.
Yeah, and they are quietly as excited about Dalton Pompey as they are as just about, well, as any non-pitcher in the system, I'd say right now, Bob.
Well, when he was much in demand at the deadline, a lot of guys wanted it. It was Norris. It was of guys who were in the minors. It was Norris. It was Sanchez. It was Pompey, and that was the order teams came a calling. If he'd have stayed in the Florida State League, he would have won the MVP. He's a switch hitter. He bunts for base hits. He runs well. He's going to be an exciting player.
There are a lot of scouts,
and his younger brother's here. Excuse me.
There are a lot of scouts at this event, I'm told.
I had 37 scouts from 25 teams yesterday. I haven't got the total for today. They're playing all the way through till Saturday in the finals at 6 o'clock Saturday.
How unique is this event in terms of? Is there anything else like it in the U.S. other?
This would compare to what they have in Jupiter, which is 160 teams or something like that. They have 12 diamonds there, and it goes nonstop for 4 days. But what they did and what Alomar did himself he raised enough money, and the Jays Care Foundation got in, that it cost $220 for a Canadian kid and $320 for a BC kid this year, whereas last year the BC kid obviously had to spend more to get here. So they subbed it.
Like four times as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You figure in the plane and everything. So that's what I mean by being good corporate citizens for the youth of whatever. Like, I remember talking to a couple of guys last year, Brandon Morrow, and he said that when he faced Toronto, that was this spring, and he says, I said, "What would this be like, those guys in that other dugout?" He said, "Well, I grew up in the Bay Area." He said, "That'd be like me getting the hit off of Zito and Mulder and Hudson, or going to the other park and pitching against Bonds, for these kids, these teenagers. It's a wonderful experience, a Canadian junior national team."
Right.
And speaking of which, five of them are missing. You heard that story, Robert.
Real quick, tell me.
The hurricane hit, hurricane or tornado hit La Paz, Mexico. So they got five, the whole team's there, but five kids who were supposed to be here. I think the last I heard, the military plane was going to come in and get them and Team USA out of there and fly them to Tijuana. And then the Canadians were going to bus to LAX and then fly home from there.
Wow. That's a long trip.
Well, after that,
we got to get out of here.
That or take a 21-hour bus ride.
I don't think so.
No.
Elliot, always a pleasure. Thanks, pal.
Always a pleasure.
Talk to you. Bob Elliot
Thank
of the Toronto
Steven.
Sun.
Thank you, Robert.
Rash Madani joins us next. Jack of all trades. It's prime time on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Mr.
A tweeter has taken issue with me calling the television audience idiots, implying that if they were idiots, they'd watch this show. This, of course, came from somebody who found out I called him an idiot by watching this show.
Mm.
I believe I rest my case.
You've run rings around him.
I don't think that ring was too big. It was a little ring. In case we haven't talked enough about it, here's Arash Madani to talk more about the Argonauts. Do you have anything to add to this thing, Madani?
Apparently.
On your show, so.
You got cut off there, or I wasn't.
You usually call me an idiot for coming on your show.
Well, I'm not calling you an idiot. I haven't called you an idiot at all. I just asked if you had anything to add to our conversation, or whether you're just going to, you know, regurgitate some stuff that you heard us talk about earlier.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing there, guys, is just how stripped down the actual office staff of that organization is. How there's effectively no marketing department in a town where you need to sell tickets. And, oh, yeah, they fired the head of ticketing before the season began and haven't replaced him, which you kind of have a ticket-selling issue, too. But when you see a football organization this stripped down the way it is, it becomes very kind of scary just because of what the next step usually is and what it can lead to.
Well, that's why I think this guy's going to throw the keys on the table. If he can't find a buyer by the end of this calendar year, he's going to give up.
The only difference with that is David Braley loves the power and clout that comes with being a CFL owner, and he loses a lot of that muscle around the table if he's going to throw the keys on the table.
Well, but he still has the Lions.
But he from a peer-to-peer standpoint, you're the guy who gave up. You're the guy who abandoned. You're the guy who didn't find a solution to the problem somehow, some way. You lose a lot of your street cred, if you will, among the Board of Governors when that happens.
Right.
You know, this stuff about them stripping the organization bare, that's a lot of that has just come to light, you know, for people outside of the, you know, the kind of inner CFL circle in the last little while. What are people who are still in that organization saying right now, Arash?
I've talked to a couple, Steve, and they're just kind of holding on to hope that maybe somehow, some way this gets fixed. But a lot are looking for life rafts. A lot are looking to get out, or a lot are looking for another opportunity. And from what I've been told is, you know, you got to find a gig before you can leave. You're not just going to leave for the, you know, for the sake of it. So that's already happened from the marketing side. A couple of people have found, you know, different and better opportunities that way. But nobody, I shouldn't say nobody, but the people I've spoken with, there doesn't seem to be a confidence at all that things are going to get better internally. There was so much hope that the MLSE thing was going to happen, and then they'd see kind of where they would stand there. But once that kind of evaporated, so did a lot of hope of the employees in the front office who work there.
How about the football people? Because they, you know, these things don't go unnoticed.
Yeah, and I've been in touch with some football people there, and you know, just their situation over the, you know, going back 2-3 weeks ago, of having to practice in three different places in the week leading up to the Labor Day game against Hamilton. That's a big issue. The fact that their meeting rooms weren't big enough, that was an issue. That there was just this constant state of flux, and then that trickles down to the players when they see the whole situation. You know, the players aren't stupid. They know when we don't have a place to call a home, that's a problem. And that, you know, it's the one thing that I, you know, some people told me is true, and some people have categorically denied, is that it's affecting the personnel on the team. That
has to. I mean, yeah. If you look up in the stands and see 40,000 empty seats at a home game.
No, that's not what I mean, Bob. What I mean is that there are restrictions on who we can sign, when we can sign them, and also from a free agent standpoint, do I want to remain here? When I look around, when I go on road trips in the different stadiums in different parts of the country, I see what it's like going into a Winnipeg, for instance, that has an outstanding stadium and a terrific facility. The Eskimos, which rivals any NFL facility you're going to find. That's where the issue there is.
Wasn't there some, there's, you know, again, because, you know, it's a cap league, so there's only so much you can spend anyway. But, you know, I guess one of the places you can spend money is to bring guys in, right? Bring NFL cuts in, fly them in. Take a look at them, either add them now or sign them for next year. There was some suggestion that they were not doing that in the way that they would normally. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And that's what one person over on the football side kind of suggested to me. And, you know, there wasn't an airlift this year. There weren't, you know, a flux of guys who came in and they had a look-see at what they're all about. That's alarming. That's troubling. You know, what's happening now, guys, and this is why it turns into a league issue, is that it now affects the competitive balance of the league, of wins and losses. Not just there, but the fact that you're playing games on a Tuesday with Winnipeg only having 4 days off between games and they have to travel. Then the Argos 4 days later have to turn around and play the BC Lions. That's a safety issue and that's a competitive balance issue. And, you know, every game should be worth the same, but when you're dealing with that clock and that schedule, that's not happening.
And that's stuff that's forced upon them because of the availability of dates right in the Rogers Center.
Correct.
Yeah, because they're the kind of ugly stepchild thing there, yeah.
Do you see an end game other than the end for the Toronto Argonauts?
Well, I mean, a lot of things have to happen, but sure. I mean, this still can come down to Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment making some kind of an investment in it, but why would MLSE step in and pay more than a dollar right now for this team?
Well, I wouldn't pay a dollar.
Right.
I think they're clearly way overvalued at a dollar. This is a franchise, whether you believe they're on a shoestring budget, they're going to lose $3 million. In a normal scenario, that. Close to $6 million.
Yeah. Yeah. No question. No question.
I mean, and we've, you know, the truth is, historically, we all know this. Historically, yeah. There has been no shortage of guys who've bought this franchise, taken over this franchise, and thought they knew how to fix it. And none of them could fix it.
Yeah, and I know you guys have talked about it, but Mark Cohan's done a lot of positive in his time as commissioner. He inherited a league with 8 franchises, and they now have 9. They've explored Atlantic expansion. They've had regular season games there under his watch, and they have an optics-friendly drug testing scenario that has been installed. But this is the blemish, and this is a massive scar on his legacy and on his resume, that this was an issue that he inherited. He's now been through 2 different ownership groups, and it hasn't been fixed.
Well, you know, and Larash, the league invested money directly in marketing in Southern Ontario under his watch. Where did it go?
Well, that's a great
In Toronto, anyway. Where did it go?
Well, and where did the Grey Cup money go, Steve?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, it worked out for the Ticats. They've had an outreach program. They've gone and kind of dug deeper into their market. They've gone into St. Catharines. They had $500,000 extra kind of infusion in cash that they believe over there has helped them, especially as they launch a new stadium. So that's kind of where the difference is between the two organizations there. The league invested in Hamilton, invested in Toronto, and what's happened is the Argos marketing department is no longer. Their ticketing department is a fraction of what it used to be, and nobody really knows what happened with that money.
We got to get out of here, but real quickly, the one, and I don't even know if it's a possibility, but when you think about who could buy the Toronto Argonauts and who would actually have a vested interest in buying the Toronto Argonauts, could you see TSN buying them again? Brunt?
Yeah, but I don't know. That's Bell, right? So that's, yeah. You know, it's a different scenario now. It's a different scenario. I don't know.
If not MLSE, but Bell.
They should have done it a few years ago and bought the whole damn league.
Yes.
Then you don't have to invest $40 million, $47 million into rights fees because you own everything.
Yeah. Not a dumb idea, but they didn't do it. Arash, thanks, pal. See you soon.
All right, guys.
Yeah. Arash Madani of Sportsnet. There's more to come. Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.